Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate 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 Vasudevaya.
So now, the next verse in the book is text 10, it appears, which has a type of a purport, but it's not exactly a normal purport. It's just some further details on the pastime that's happening right now. When is the next... which is the next 25. Verse?
Huh?
25. Let's see. 20, oh, I see. Okay. Well,
that's the only verse on this chapter that's in our sheet. Next purport on the sheet is from chapter 63.
Okay. So this. So 10 is not on the sheets.
9 is the only verse on the sheet.
Which has been done.
Yes.
So text 10. Tasyosha nama duhita svapne pradyumnina latim kanyala bata kantena pragadrishta shritena sa. Translation. In a dream, Bana's daughter, the maiden Usha, had an amorous encounter with the son of Pradyumna, even though she had never before seen or heard of her lover. And the purport. The incidents now described will lead up to the fight predicted by Lord Shiva. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verses from the Vishnu Purana, which explain Usha's dream. Usha bana sutta vipra paravatim shambhuna saha kridantim upalakshyochai spriham chakre tadashrayam. O Brahman, when Usha, the daughter of Bana, happened to see Parvati playing with her husband, Lord Shambhu, Usha intensely desired to experience the same feelings. Tata sakala chitagya goritam ahabhavinim alamat yarta tapena bartratvam api ramsyase. At that time, Goddess Gauri Parvati, who knows everyone's heart, told the sensitive young girl, "Don't be so disturbed. You will have a chance to enjoy with your own husband." Ityukta sa tada chakre kadeti matyam atmana kova bharta mametyenam punar apyaha Parvati. Hearing this, Usha thought to herself, "But when and who will my husband be?" In response, Parvati addressed her once more. Vaishaka Shukla Dwadasyam Swapneyo Bibhavam Tava Karishyati Sate Bharta Rajaputri Bhavishyati. The man who approaches you in your dream on the 12th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month Vaishakha will become your husband, O princess. So that's the purport. Tasyasha nana duhita swapne pradyumnina ratim kanyala bata kantena pragadrishta shutena sa. In a dream, Bana's daughter, the maiden Usha, had an amorous encounter with the son of Pradyumna, though she had never before seen or heard of her lover. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the description here, as in many parts of the 10th canto, is more in a narrative form, and as a result, there are not so many very clear philosophical points which are made, more just describing the events, different special events which lead up to, or which are parts of special pastimes of the Lord and his associates. So this is also like that, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has expanded on this particular verse by quoting Vishnu Purana, which elaborates further on the particular verse, on the events in the particular verse, by describing those events more elaborately, more in detail. Srimad Bhagavatam, as we've mentioned before, is everything is very compressed. Not that anything is really missing, but everything is presented in a very extremely succinct form, where the essence is presented and the real the value is there, but fine points of detail and so on and so forth are not always there. But these verses here from Vishnu Purana, they're clarifying some of the events surrounding this pastime, that Usha, who's the daughter of great demon Vanasura, that she dreamt of Aniruddha, who she had never seen before. She had never even heard of him before, but somehow, by some higher arrangement, he became present in her mind while she was in the dreaming condition. And she became extremely fascinated and very deeply attached to him, even irrevocably attached, and she fixed her mind and fixed her heart and her life became fixed on him. But there was just that problem, that who is he? Where is he? Does he even exist really? Or is he from the past, the future, or is he just an imaginary person? But all these events, other events surrounding that incident, are there to give a little more insight into what's happening. That she, she previously, somehow or other, had seen Lord Shiva and Parvati enjoying in some conjugal type of way. And she became, as a young woman, a young girl, but still gradually becoming mature, she became very attracted and very fascinated. Of course, everybody, the girls and the boys in those days, they led what could be what are called more sheltered lives than young people these days, who are basically exposed to so many things very, very easily. But in those days, in Vedic times, they led more sheltered existences. Nowadays, of course, the idea of a more sheltered existence may be even looked at scornfully, as if people are being repressed and denied and actually unfairly not being allowed to observe and participate in certain aspects of life. Well, of course, the more sensual aspects of life, as if these things were really highly desirable, and that the young people being restricted in these ways are being deprived and cheated. But really, it's not like that. Even they use this term sheltered, that a sheltered type of existence, and we also use that term in Krishna consciousness, that devotees take shelter of Krishna, of a spiritual master, of the association of devotees, even of a temple, of the process of devotional service. And our understanding of that idea of shelter is that something like coming in from a storm, that type of shelter is very desirable. Or if not coming in from a storm, just being there, being in the shelter while a storm is raging outside. And so to be sheltered in that way is very desirable. Who would want to be out in some devastating storm? And like this, it can be very dangerous, can be deadly. So to be sheltered in that way, that's very desirable. Everyone would want that. Just like in the Govardhan Leela, which is coming up, the Govardhan Puja is coming up in 3 or 4 weeks. It's a Saturday, isn't it? It's a Saturday. So that means 3.5 weeks from now. So, Lord Indra sent such a huge storm, a truly unique storm, which had the power to destroy the whole universe. But it was all that power was just focused on Brajmandala. And all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the animals, they became very deeply disturbed. And they approached Lord Krishna, "Please give us shelter. Protect us." And Krishna said, there's a verse there, Krishna says, "Yes, I must give shelter to these devotees. They are my family, and they are my people, and the living, the animals also. They're all my dependents. And I have taken," Krishna says, "I have taken a vow to protect everybody who comes to me for shelter. Therefore I have to give them protection." So he lifted Govardhan Hill. And they all came in under Govardhan Hill. And under there it was very nice. There were all sorts of comfortable arrangements for living. beds and pleasure gardens and all sorts of very wonderful situations. But the main point was all in the shelter of Govardhan Hill. And even the inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the animals, they were there with Krishna for 7 days and seven nights. And they didn't even utilize those very wonderful facilities for taking rest and for just wandering around in a very pleasant environment in the gardens and so on. They didn't take advantage of those facilities. They just stood there looking at Krishna. They didn't eat or sleep, but they simply drank in the beauty of Krishna through their eyes. In this way, their lives were sustained for 7 days and seven nights. And it was very wonderful. So this is shelter, spiritual shelter. This type of shelter is of such a nature that even if people have the opportunity to get material enjoyment and different material facilities for using independently of Krishna, but if people are really, really very nicely sheltered, and if they've taken it, if they really accepted that shelter very nicely, then that shelter in and of itself is complete. And all the other facilities, whatever the material world may have to offer, it is seen as being very insubstantial and not really offering anything of any value for the devotee. So like this, shelter. This is the point with shelter. That to lead a sheltered existence where someone was telling me the other day, just in Johannesburg, I think, their son, who is aged 5, just started going to some play school or some sort of preliminary school. And the mother was telling me that already some of the other children, who are also 5 years old, some of the boys already have girlfriends. This is very advanced. And you know, sometimes you see these photos around little boy, little girl, that age, holding hands or, you know, kissing each other or something of that sort of nature, which is, you know, in one sense, considerably beyond their real physical or psychological development, but still, you know, they're somehow or other going through certain motions, and people think, oh, how cute, how sweet and nice, and so on and so on. That this is desirable, even at such an early age, that it's desirable. And that, you know, particularly if a person comes to the point of their teens and mid-teens, and if they're not quite active in those spheres of activity, then their parents may become anxious. Is something wrong with my son or daughter? Etc., etc. So, just see. Tamagun. Lord Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, one characteristic of tamagun is that the person spontaneously, naturally, is inclined to accept wrong things as right and right things as wrong, and to just be oriented in these ways. And in this regard, all these types of social interactions, male and female, we see this extremely vividly. We see it very, very clearly in current day society. And to be sheltered and in a social environment in which one is not exposed to those things is considered to be all very old-fashioned, archaic, and very, you know, like coming out of a, not just a type of foolish mentality, but coming out of a mentality which is even a dangerous mentality, to restrict people in these ways so they don't get exposed and they don't get involved in these things until they are more mature actually and more responsible and not just, you know, easily excited youths. That protective mentality from the parents' side and society in general is seen as being, you know, even dangerous. That to restrict people like that can be bad for them. So, but shelter, that sheltered existence, shelter is really a nice term, because if the young people are not sheltered in that way, if they're simply exposed to everything and anything, and what to speak of exposed to it, but encouraged and pressed in different ways that you should, you must. If you don't, well, something is wrong, and then they may be ridiculed and so on. So this type of mentality is a very bad mentality. And it's very unfortunate. Very unfortunate. And if the children are not sheltered like that, then they become Varna Sankara. And as Arjuna says in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, if the family institution falls down and the parents are not really protective in that way, then the children just are allowed to just run wild. Then you get Varna Sankara, and he says, the way Arjuna puts it is, Jayate Varna Sankara, that the Varna Sankara, the unwanted progeny, the severely undisciplined children who become wild adults, that they win. Jayate. Jaya means victory. The Varna Sankara become victorious, and the whole of society becomes corrupted, and in this way all sorts of sinful activity becomes extremely prominent, and the ultimate result is society becomes extremely unstable. And happiness is conspicuous by its absence. Satisfaction, peace of mind, these things, not there to be found. Yes. Just like I saw a cartoon many, many years ago by the same person who did the cartoon of the animals going into the slaughterhouse, if you remember. Talked about that many times. The animals are going into the slaughterhouse. Two little piglets somehow or other run away, and their parents, who are on their way into the slaughterhouse, they say to each other, just see this younger generation, no sense of responsibility. So there was another cartoon by the same fellow. He's like very heavy, anti-nuclear, anti-industrial, and so on. Cartoonist. There's another one. There's the general. It's the in the sort of headquarters where the computers are organizing the army. And some robots come along with machine guns and tap him on the shoulder and say, "You heard about the Industrial Revolution, right? Well, we won." So Jayate Varna Sankara. The Varna Sankara, let us face it, if they have not won yet, they're winning. They're well on the way. Even we see in the previously pious Hindu society here in South Africa, where previously the most degraded entity was the corner boy. You know, the corner boy. But now things have gone far beyond that. The corner boy would be considered a right-wing conservative. So shelter is very important, actually, to be sheltered. So Usha, she was leading such a sheltered life. She was not wandering around the streets with her friends in a miniskirt or other tight clothes and all that, trying to entice some boy and, you know, all that sort of thing, advertise herself. She was not trying to do that. She was living in the palace and she was not associating with people like that in that way. She was not associating in that way. But then she got some association. It's very interesting how powerful association is. Somehow or other, she saw Lord Shiva and Parvati engaged in some type of conjugal interaction. Conjugal, of course, the word conjugal strictly means married. If you look in a dictionary, you'll see conjugal means married. So some type of conjugal interaction, doesn't say exactly what, but just some sort of contact was there between them in which their sort of attraction or affection for each other as husband and wife was being displayed. And somehow Usha saw that and it struck her. It struck her. And she was already mature enough that type of potential was there physically, emotionally, psychologically. It was already present due to the natural process of aging. But although, because of the sheltered existence, these types of emotions and ideas had not really come into the forefront of her consciousness. But when she was exposed to that association, then suddenly, oh, it came to the forefront of her mind, and very powerfully the idea arose that I would like, this is very nice. I would like this, I want this, I must have this. Such is the natural course of material nature as the maturing process goes on. Prabhupada said it just referring to some Vedic type of or Bengali type of saying that there are two things a person does not need to learn in school. One of them is how to have a relationship with the opposite sex. And the other is, I can't remember actually. Anyone remember? I can't remember. Something like how to eat or something extremely basic. These things you don't need to learn at school. It just comes. It just comes as the aging process progresses. So Usha, because of the sheltered condition, these types of ideas were not prominent, even though she was mature enough physically and developed in that way. But then she had that association, and by the influence of that association, then it came very powerfully to the forefront, and she felt that I must, this is essential. And she thought Parvati, through her mystic powers, could understand the thinking of Usha. So Parvati spoke to her, but Usha thought, when will I be able to do this? When will I get a husband? And who will my husband be? Not, you know, when will I be able to snag some guy at the disco or the party, you know, whatever, these types of ideas. But who will be my husband? And Parvati, understanding all this and herself having great, great mystic powers, said, don't worry. Shortly your husband, who your husband will be, is going to be revealed to you in a dream. And of course Parvati, being the presiding deity of material nature, she would know that actually things were going to unfold beyond just the dream, but unfold in the way that they did unfold. And Usha, she set her mind like that. She set her mind. She was not, as is said somewhere, it's also Vedic, that a woman of low character may be embracing one man while simultaneously looking at another man and simultaneously within her mind thinking of another man. Multitasking. In other words, keep your options open just in case some better opportunity arises. This may appear to be an intelligent strategy, but really it is a strategy for instability. Yeah. For instability. In any matter, and particularly these matters, it's such a fundamental aspect of material existence. A person is encouraged to be very stable in these things because it's so fundamental that if one is unstable in this department, then one's whole life becomes unstable. And when you get enough people unstable in that way, then the whole society becomes unstable. And welcome to Durban 2007. This is welcome to Chatsworth, for that matter. This is the environment we're living in. So it all happened through association. Association is a very powerful thing. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is 90% association. And if we analyze, we see how that is true. That in every aspect, practically, if not literally, every aspect of our lives in Krishna consciousness, association is there in one way or another. We are associating now. We're giving the class your hearing glass. This is association. We've read from Bhagavatam. This is association. We chant our rounds. Krishna, what is the point? What is the value? What is it about? That Krishna is present in the holy names. So, we chant our rounds. We have kirtan. This is association. We take prasadam. Why is prasadam special? Because It is a form of Krishna. This evening, is there anything sort of special or for the evening, the Wednesday program? I have a video. It's an amazing video, I tell you. Everyone who I've shown it to has just been quite deeply affected by it. It's of a festival, Harinam Festival in South Russia. And it's been very brilliantly put together. And it's got different quotes from Prabhupada about the chanting and about the prasadam, about the books. It's really nice. We could show it to them. I mean, it is... Any Krishna conscious video is nice, but this is really exceptional. Prasadam, what is the point? It is not just that it's vegetarian or sattvic or nicely cooked or something like this. But the point is, it is prasadam, it is offered to Krishna. So it is not different from Krishna. It is association also. And then, of course, we interact with each other from time to time. This is also association. And we go out distributing books. This is association. And we see the deities. This is association also. So if you analyze, then you see that this principle of association is just running through like very essential thread through practically, if not literally, every aspect of our lives in Krishna consciousness. And here Usha had that association, even though she was living very, very sheltered existence. But she had that association and it aroused her nature, physical, psychological nature very strongly. Interesting point, her father is Banasura. Banasura. So she had his association, obviously. But she was not a demon. She was a devotee, or at least, obviously she must have become a devotee at the very least, when she connected up with Aniruddha. But Banasura, he's a big demon. And she was not affected by his association. Interesting. Narakasura, who was the son of Varaha and Bhumi, when Lord Varaha lifted the earth from the Gavarak ocean. So from them came a son whose name at that point we don't know, but he became Narakasura. How did he become Narakasura? By the association of Banasura. And there's one or two other demons, I think Dwivida, if I remember correctly. Dwivida, he was a great devotee of Lord Ram, but he also got the association of Banasura, and he became a demon. He offended Lakshman. So there are a few people, they were devotees, but they got the association of Banasura and they became demons, like prominent demons. But Usha didn't. Usha remained a very pious girl, and certainly as the wife of Aniruddha, she was a devotee. But on the whole, association is a very important factor in Krishna consciousness. So we have to get good association, avoid bad association. We have to be good association, avoid being bad association. There's the classic case. Some young bhakta or bhaktin is having some difficulty adjusting to life in Krishna consciousness, life in a temple, and they are thinking, I'm going to leave. So then they tell their best friend, devotee, also bhakta or bhakti, you know, this is too much, I think I'm going to leave. And the other bhakta or bhakti says, you know, I was thinking the same thing. I'll leave with you. So this is bad association. But if we want to give good association, then we can help people to overcome their predicaments like this. So like this, association is very important. Actually, we have a seminar, Getting and Giving Good Association. It's quite interesting. And even we look in Srimad Bhagavatam, we find so many cases of people. They were not devotees, or they were very mixed up in some ways, but they got some good association, and they became very nicely situated. Dhruva Maharaj, and there's so many cases are there in Srimad Bhagavatam, in different shastras, Jagai and Madai, and Valmiki, King Prachinabarhi, and so on and so forth. Many, many cases there. Even Ajamil, very interesting case. He was also a very pious young man, but he got some bad association and became overwhelmed. But later he got some good association. Who gave him good association? The Yamadutas. The Yamadutas gave him good association, at least effectively. He came to his senses and he understood that I have been on the wrong track. So association is a very important part of life in general and life in Krishna consciousness. And we must try to remain within the shelter of that Krishna conscious situation and not go outside and get exposed too much to these things. Otherwise it can have very far-reaching effects. Stimulate deeper parts of your material nature, which otherwise were sort of, you know, not active, but then they can become stimulated and start trying to push you in the direction of material existence. Any comments or questions?
Dreams seems to be a part of this verse today. So what part do dreams play in the life of the devotee, if at all?
Not so much. There are, you know, quite a number of cases, even amongst our devotees today, but particularly in the past, there are many cases of devotees who had dreams where some revelation was given or something like that. And in this case, there's some revelation of a certain type. But Prabhupada was asked, you'll find it's in the letters, Prabhupada was asked about the importance of dreams, and Prabhupada said generally they're not very important. Because when you're sleeping, you're in tamagun, and just different things which are stored up, they just come to the conscious part of your mind while you're in deep tamagun, and you know. And so what if you get some instruction in a dream? Krishna conscious, apparently. Should you take it? Divine revelation, because it came in a dream. Prabhupada said you should be very careful about that. It may be. But you must see, you must check whether it concurs with, you know, clearly bona fide instructions. And Prabhupada said there are so many instructions in Shastra, in the books, in the classes, there's so many instructions. Why should it be that you would think that if an instruction comes in a dream, that now, oh, it's a special instruction. Because of the nature of sleep, it's more likely to be something mixed up. Like some of you may remember many years ago now, several, or 10 even, years ago, one lady, very nice lady devotee, married to a very nice devotee in the congregation, she came racing into the temple about 8 o'clock with a watermelon. And she said, you know, I had a dream. I got the instruction. I don't know who told her. I can't remember. Somehow she got the instruction in a dream. I must offer a watermelon to Krishna before 9 o'clock. Otherwise, my husband and I will divorce. So we concluded that this was not necessarily like, you know, really a bona fide dream, so to speak. Srila Prabhupada ki.